Yo, 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 welcome to Crate 808, and today we're sitting down to talk about a seminal debut rap record with one of our favourite music journalists and writers out there. Yes, it's the owner of one of the best online rap mags going, all the way from LA. We've got Jeff Weiss in the house. How are you doing, man?
I'm good, hanging in there, you know, just one day in the apocalypse at a time, you know, slowly tilting towards oblivion.
I love you. I love it, man. I'm riding that train with you, bro. I'm on that rocket. I'm on the back with you.
Yeah.
So yeah. We're getting there. But
a little less apocalyptic than it used to be. It's kind of now just settled into a mild dystopia again.
I feel you, man. I feel you.
I mean, mild. I mean, like moderate.
Yeah. You know? I know what you mean, man. But just as a fan of your work, just going to fanboy out early on this pod. Your work has been seeing us through, bro. Like over here, everything you guys do, Pasha the Weiss, all that stuff, it helps in these days when it's getting dark outside and the walls are closing in. It's just nice to see other voices out there who are just kind of echoing sentiments. And yeah, man, making you think.
That means a lot. Thanks. I mean, a lot of talented people are out for the site. So I'm lucky to be able to kind of just like help kind of build something that allows them to kind of shine.
100%, man. 100%. Well, today, man, we're going to talk about a record that's close to your heart. But before we do, I got to ask you what I ask everyone who comes on the pod, Jeff. What's the least hip hop thing you've done in the last 24 hours, my friend?
Least hip hop thing I've done in the last 24 hours. I mean, like, I do a lot of yoga and shit. It's like not okay. Really hip hop. But, you know, you gotta keep limber out here, you know, where it's zooming on and the, you know, what are you going to do?
What's your pose? What's your yoga pose? The one that's it. Once you reach that.
My favorite pose is when it's over. Like lying on the ground motionless. Yeah, I like that. I don't really like anything else. Yeah, probably that's the... I mean, it's a pretty not hip-hop thing that I do 3-4 times a week. I mean, it's not like... I don't know what the hip-hop workout would be. I mean, like maybe like sparring at a gym or something.
Yeah.
Would be like kind of hip-hop.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or like reenacting the In the Club video or something where I'm just like doing sit-ups from a ceiling and running on a treadmill with like cathodes attached to me.
I love that.
That's kind of hip-hop.
I could see that. Yeah, yeah, that's hip-hop. That.
I've never done that.
I'm waiting for the yoga version of that in the club somewhere.
Never too late. Yeah, I feel like a lot of rappers probably do yoga now, but they just don't talk about it publicly.
Yeah, man.
Like, there's no way that Drake hasn't done yoga for
100%.
Sure. Big Sean definitely has done yoga.
There we go.
I've tried to get rappers into yoga, but I don't think it's a thing.
Have you?
Not yet. But it will be.
All right. So have you said, are you invited them to come to do yoga with you? That's amazing. I love that.
Well, maybe the ones on the label I might have watched. But no one really wants to do. Yeah. I actually don't like doing yoga with anybody ever. That's the Zoom has been the one best part. The only good, one of the good parts of the world crumbling is that I don't have to see anybody in yoga class, which is really life affirming for me. No one has to see me, and I can preserve what's left of my self-respect. So.
Jeff, I love that, man. I love that. I think I'm about to take up yoga now, man, just from that chat. Yeah, I like it. I like it. I want to stay limber.
It's good. Like, if you're going insane, I think yoga and meditation are probably the best ways not to go completely insane. That's all I found. Yeah.
I'm with you, man. I'm doing that processing, breathing exercises, meditating. It helps. Yeah. It definitely helps.
Yeah. There's some Indian rappers do yoga, like, because it's the homeland of it. I wonder if it's more socially acceptable.
Maybe. Yeah.
That's my next story.
That's a rabbit hole I want to see on the site.
Is the stigma not here because it's more of a traditional art form versus here where it's, you know, just a bunch of like,
yeah.
I mean, there's nothing worse than white people into yoga. I mean, just as a whole. It's not, I mean, like, it's just not a good thing to talk about publicly.
True,
so,
but
man. I'm hoping that by talking about it publicly at the beginning of this podcast, everyone will turn it off, and then whatever I say about sugar free, everyone will just be like, oh, don't care anymore.
I never thought if we're going to do a podcast episode about sugar free that we'd be talking about yoga in the same thing. So it's kind of nice we can marry them worlds up, and I feel like this is.
Yeah.
It's a nice thing.
I don't know if it was Walt Whitman or DJ Quick who said, you must contain multitudes. So,
both on the same level.
America's most complete artist, and he was America's most complete poet. So, you know.
Boom. Jeff, I am ready to jump down that DJ quick rabbit hole with you, man. And I'm sure with this album we're going to talk about, 1997's Street Gospel, Sugar Free. Thank you, Jeff, first of all, for making me discover this record, man, because it's not been on my radar. I'm not really familiar with his work. Bang. You were like, let's bring this to the table. Man,
what? Screaming incessantly. I'm like, I won't do this unless I talk about Street Gospel.
And rightly so, after hearing it. Like, man, this is an album and a half. But I mean, let's open it up. I just wanted to ask, why was it this record you wanted to talk about? What was it about it that kind of just gets you like going? Do you know what I mean?
Sugar Free in LA is like a folk hero, you know, both in a good and a bad way. I mean, he's like this mythological figure in a white linen suit. The thing about Sugar Free is he really has been everywhere. He's in, if you look closely, he's in the Nothing But a G Thing video. You know, he grew up in, I'm going to start talking to Sugar Free. I mean, he was born in Gardena, lived like most of his childhood in Oakland. And I think like that's probably where, I mean, his closest analog to style is probably E-40, just because they're rapping both like 8 bars ahead of the beat and 4 bars behind it, and it somehow like creates its own pocket that, like, you know, it's brilliant. So he has that. I mean, E-40 is definitely his closest like stylistic like kin, and he obviously E-40 came before him, but kind of. I mean, because Sugar Free started rapping, I think, when he was about 20, and he might have been a little older than 20, and like 91, he met up with this new Black Tone that's pretty legendary. He was allied with Dre, and, you know, like Sugar Free was in Compton at the time, I think. And then, well, he grew up in Pomona, but he lived in Compton for a while, so there's a Compton connection to him. And he was in the, you know, he's in the Nothing But a G Thing video, just a quick cameo, but like you can see it, and it's crazy, you know, that someone, like some internet detective, was like, is that Sugar Free? And you're like, this is what, like the only thing that the internet was
that's it incredible was,
yeah. To discover the Sugar Free, to like to do the Zapruder film of the Nothing But a G Thing video, and, you know, frame by frame find Sugar Free.
Yeah, and that's it. We can end the internet now.
Yeah, and then, you know, he kept on going to jail is the problem, because, you know, he first went to jail for burglary, I think, and he's been to jail, I'm sure, for pimping 1,000 times. And, you know, he didn't actually get to record his debut album until 97. I think he was like 27 years old. And that was Street Gospel. He linked up with DJ Quick, like, I think via Black Tone, at like a sports card shop in like the mid 90s. And then, like, I think Quick just like was like, you know, I mean, Quick has one of the, I mean, you can't talk about this album. One of the reasons I want to talk about it is because you can't talk about it without talking about DJ Quick. I mean, it's one of the best produced albums ever made. And it's really kind of when Quick found his like, all of Quick's stuff is amazing. Like, you know, Quick is the name's incredible. Way Too Funky is incredible. Safe and Sound.
For sure.
But he kind of takes a leap, I think, with Street Gospel, the leap kind of into rhythmalism of 98. Like, you know, he's kind of incorporating more of like the kind of traditionally Middle Eastern sounds. Right. He almost looks like he's got a sitar, but it's like a keyboard. And he just like, he's just so experimental and so funky. And Sugar Free is just like one of the funkiest people alive. So it just like, the rhythms on that record are just like nothing like anyone has ever done before or since. I mean, because E-40 is incredible, but like, I mean, I love the E-40 producers. Like, they're great, but like no one is DJ Quick, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just a perfect, it's a perfect, I mean, to me, the album is probably, you know, it's up there with like a Doggy Style of, in terms of like one producer, one artist, even though, I mean, even though Daz produced a lot of Doggy Style, probably YG, you know, helping out. And for sure.
Yeah, but because that's really interesting to me listening to that, because with Quick, just my history with Quick has always come back to one song, which I, Dollars and Cents, is like, for me, probably a perfect rap. It's near perfection, that rap song, for me, because it's embedded in my brain, because that was on the Murder Was the Case soundtrack. I remember hearing that was the first time I ever heard Quick, and I was like, that sticks out on that album. Well, it's an amazing soundtrack, but I remember at the time not really listening to Safe and Sounds and stuff like that, and getting into rhythmalism and being like, what is this? This is incredible. What for you then was the, because I've not heard those early Quick albums as much, what was the difference then? What, like, was he just like branching out with new instruments? Was he like just doing a whole new tempo? What was the
samples are more unorthodox, I think. Like, as I mean, I don't know what he's sampling on Street Gospel. I don't know if he is sampling on Street Gospel. You know, rhythmalism is like, seems like he's clearly becoming like a one. I mean, he had Bacon with the guitarist, you know, like, I mean, he's almost like, I mean, I know Dre was obviously doing the Funkadelic stuff, like, you know, and he created a band, but like Quick was almost like, that stuff is like more faithful. It's like, I always think of the scene in like, you know, not to say, I mean, Quick is sampling Clear and like funk records on the first album, you know, he's doing more recognizable funk samples, and then he almost creates his own like genre of the funk, whereas like there's a split, right, where they both are doing like the early kind of funk stuff. Quick is doing more 80s stuff, Dre's kind of doing more 70s funk. And then Quick kind of like merges it with Middle Eastern music and like his own kind of like, they're like so fluorescent. His like, you know, and he's a master piano player. I mean, I once went to Quick's house and he's like, I wish we still had the video of it. He's like, I don't, the cameraman that didn't tape, but like, it's like sacred stuff. We have a lot of cool stuff from it, but yeah, we missed this like incredible. And Quick's like, I don't usually show people my chops. And he starts playing the piano and you're like, oh my God, you're like a brilliant pianist. Like, you know, he just had such great chops.
Jesus.
And you know, he, like the guitarist he had on the record. I mean, Quick is really to me like a, he's like an orchestra conductor. He became, that was his thing. And Dre obviously kind of did a different thing, but he goes to more like the minor chord, the stomp, the Scott Storch sound. And Quick gets like lighter, funkier, airier. And it becomes kind of more in tune with like, you know, the, what you think of, I mean, I think of like a Pitchin' on a Party is like perfect LA noir. Cause it's like, if you listen to Pitchin' on a Party, it sounds like the greatest like imagination of LA you could possibly have. You know, you see the palm trees, you see the backyard barbecue, you see a sparkling blue pool, you know, in your head. And then like, you actually listen to the lyrics and it's like DJ Quick complaining the whole time about how, like, why did he throw a party? Like everyone is fucking ruining his apartment and they're knocking, idiot drunk guests are like knocking the fucking chords out so the music stops and you know, you're just used by people. And that's just to me, that's like so perfectly LA, because you're like, oh, this is paradise. And you're like, oh, it's a hell. You know? And like, it's like, that's the duality of the city really well. And Quick is just embodies it just incredibly, I think. He's the greatest producer, I think, of all. I mean, he's my number one West Coast producer. Hard to pick the greatest producer of all time. I mean, like, there's a part of me that would always say RZA, just because, like, RZA is, like, even though Quick is, like, a more virtuosic musician and certainly had more longevity in terms of, no, not longevity. I mean, RZA's had longevity in terms of, like, his impact, but, you know, he's been more consistent for a longer period of time.
Yeah.
Quick, I mean, I'll you know, RZA kind of checked out from, but Quick, I'll check anything he drops to the day he dies. And Chicka Free too. I mean, he just dropped a compilation album. I'm like, man, I need to hear it. Because I mean, Chicka Free never stopped rapping incredibly well. And Quick too.
Yo, yo, yo. Just interrupting this episode to give you a quick update on our plans for 2021. But before I do, just remember to subscribe on YouTube and like this video. Also, get involved in the comments. We always have some dope takes on there. So shout out to people that are getting involved. We love reading them. And hopefully some more of you guys can get on there and we'll shout you out on the episodes coming up. Now, on to 2021. We here at Crate 808 are setting up a Patreon where for the price of a pint or a coffee every month, we'll be bringing you even more dope hip-hop episodes. Simply go to crate808.com, subscribe to the newsletter, you'll get all the updates on our plans. But as a taster, each month we're thinking of bringing you 90s rap hidden gem album reviews that you can vote for. So if you enjoy people like Master Ace, Diamond D, The Lynch Mob, Paris, Big Noid, Blase Blase, we'll be doing a lot more of those. We're going to do our Why I Love series, the MF Doom and J Dilla editions. Each month we'll bring on a guest and dig into why they love a certain Doom or JD track and then test that love. How deep is that love? Next up, Wu-Tang Chronicles Ghostface Killah edition. We're aiming here, I don't know if it's going to be good or bad, but we're aiming to go through every solo Wu project and we're going to start with Ghostface catalog. So we're going to go in, we're going to talk about the music, we're going to talk about the fashion sense and just some of the amazing bars he's dropped in that career. And the Griselda marathon, I want to do it. If we get enough patrons, we're going to do it. We're going to go through every single Griselda project and really, let's dive in. Yeah, so get involved, hit up crate808.com, subscribe to the newsletter as well as the YouTube and the podcast. Now, back to the episode. Because this is a kind of a two-pronged conversation. One, we can talk about Chicka Free and what he's bringing to this album as well, and as just as an MC and just as a person. But also, with the Quick thing, I was going to say, I don't know, maybe it's me like just having Dre in a box, which is like, we know what Dre does, but I think Dre works within parameters in a weird way. Obviously, experiments. Yeah. He has experimented. Of course he has. He's been amazing. But it's almost like Quick might set them parameters, but then he just absolutely throws them down, just crushes them, and does something like the Tiptoe reprise on this album where you're like, what the fuck? Like, I'm just, before I even jumped on with you just now, I was like, this is amazing. It's like rap space prog rap. You know what I mean? Like, it just goes off, and I love that.
I mean, like, he's just, it was around the time, I mean, it must have been like 2 years afterwards, or like, it was a little bit, he made Buck Bounce, Right Ball, and MJG. Like, I think of a song like that where you're like, what the fuck is that? And like, he was still doing Mixer stuff in like 06, which is like again, like the prototype of like ratchet music. I mean, Quick, like, you know, if you're from LA, and Sugar Free too, I mean, that's why he's on the, you know, the Schoolboy Q album, you know, YG, I'll work with Sugar Free. Mm. Like Rucci, I know, like, you know, I think it was like Fly For Life. Like, you know, he started, you know, like that was like, he was like 5 years old and like was rocking all the words, but like Fly For Life. I mean, if you're from LA, like you can't, like, even before like I had Street Gospel, like I'd heard half of it because it was just like, you know, If You Stay Ready was all on the radio all the time. Mm. You know, I'd Rather Give You My Bitch, Why You Bullshit. Like these were songs that were kind of like, they're like, I mean, they're problematic now. I mean, everything I guess is problematic now. Mm. I mean, like it's like something you kind of can't avoid, and it doesn't necessarily excuse the content of the lyrics or whatever. But I mean, I think I see Sugar Free, especially in the tradition of like a Red Fox, a Dolemite, like Blowfly. Mm. You know, this is like a proud tradition of stuff that's like profane, X-rated. It's not so sweet. I mean, like you can take it literally, but like, I don't know. It's like, it's interesting, right? Because it's like people want to have it both ways, right? They want to say when an artist is like, has problematic lyrics about everything, then it's not necessarily a character. And you might find the character repulsive and, you know, you might hate the character. And that's, I think everyone's right to hate whatever they want to hate. Mm. But when rappers talk about violence and murder, people are like okay with it, except for like when the white district attorney's like, these are their literal lyrics. And you're like, I wish everyone would stop taking art so literally. Like art has to be art. It's not like, we live in this culture of narcissism where everyone thinks that everything the person does is them. And like, they need to like, there needs to be a space for people to like, this is the character. You might not like it. And like, hopefully it's not like, but like judge them on their personal, you can judge them on their personal life, I think. Mm. You know, however you want, you know, like if, you know, Sugar Free, I mean, you can judge on his personal life too all day long. But the music I see as a character, I don't think that's I don't see all the sides of Sugar Free on the record because he's giving you like this. I mean, you kind of do though. I mean, if you really like, you know, like Dip Da is like about, you know, like that's why no one, you know, it's like, we live in this world where it's like, no one wants to like, everyone wants to demonize the behavior, and it's much harder to understand where it comes from. And like, but it doesn't excuse it necessarily. And like, these are just all complicated issues. It's funny that we're talking about that with Sugar Free, because the album's so fucking funny is the thing. Like, yeah. I'm like, it's so funny. Like, yeah. You know, it's like his hair is wavier than Redondo Beach, like silkier than Charlotte's Web. I mean, yeah. It's just like, the reality is like, at the end of the day, like pimping is like the oldest, you know, thing in the book. It's like, you know, it's like, and prostitution, you know, it's like, look, like it's like, he reminds me, I was joking about this, but I was like, he's like Serge Gainsbourg in a way. You know what I mean? Like, he's like Pomona's Serge Gainsbourg, where you're like, all right, like Serge Gainsbourg's like one of the best albums ever made is History of Melody Nelson, right? And it's like riff on Lolita, which basically we're in the same conversations where like Nabokov was demonized 70 years ago for writing this book. He could barely get it out in America. It was like almost impossible for him to release in America. And one of the greatest works of art of the 20th century. Then Serge Gainsbourg, 12 years later, does History of Melody Nelson, which is, I mean, I just wrote about it. I interviewed Jane Birkin. If you read the lyrics, you're like, okay, it's a guy in his early 40s hitting a 14-year-old girl with a Rolls Royce and then like having a seduction of her. Like, I'm like, I don't think you need any, I don't think anyone needs me to be like, that is wrong. Like, I think we all are in accord that that's like not good behavior, yeah, and should never, but like judging the work of art as what it is, it's like, it's clearly a fantasy. You know what, yeah, I mean? And like Sugar Free is, this is like maybe a dark fantasy, but that's like not necessarily, it's not reality. The world is so literal now. There's like no, like, I mean, like I sound like one of these, like, I don't want to sound like these like anti-woke scourges that are like, there's no comedy left, you know, not, there is comedy and there's plenty of funny people. I mean, like Eric Andre is very funny and doesn't need to like tell horrible jokes. Like, you know what I mean? Like there's Nathan For You is very funny and does, you know, like stuff that's not necessarily reprehensible. I mean, there are ways to do it. It might be a little more challenging for comedians, but at the same time, like maybe it has to be more challenging. Maybe it's just the world and maybe you have to work a little harder for a good joke. And that's fine. But Sugar Free to me is like, you know, it's what it is. And like this album is so, it's so like rich with comedy and humor and like just it's bizarre. And just, it's so technically, and like, you know, people want to talk about like, you know, it's like, this is the thing with all rap music, which is so frustrating to me. It's like, everyone wants to talk like, yeah, I remember when, I'm old enough to remember when like Dre and Snoop were like Public Enemy number one, right? Mm. And now, you know, Snoop is like everyone's you know, rightfully so, everyone's favorite uncle. He's an American treasure. Like, Snoop always was an American treasure. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, from perfection is perfected. Like, if you go back and listen to this, you know, I was listening to, like, some song that he put out, like, on a 91, like, Good Life compilation. And, I mean, that stuff is incredible. I mean, Snoop's been amazing from day one. Deep Cover is incredible. Mm. But he was Public Enemy number one, and Dre was too. And people want to, you know, they don't want to listen to a little Geta Boy. They don't want to listen to it like, I'm like blanking on the Snoop, or the day the, you know, Blank took over from the Chronic, you know, there are songs like that, that like have such a deep meaning and like, you know, and like give you such a three-dimensional understanding of what experience is like. And I think with Sugar Free, you hear a song like, you know, I Want to Go Home, the County Jail song.
Unbelievable.
Like, and you have a, you know, and like you have a song like Dip Da, and then it goes really well with like, okay, Fly for Life. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, it's a complicated thing, but everyone wants to talk about the Nothing But a G thing or the serial killer or the murder was the, you know what I mean? And murder was the case. Like that wasn't even like, he wrote that allegedly before the murder happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, it's just, I don't know. Like when people talk about rap, it's like, so it's the most frustrating thing. Not to say that I'm the only arbiter. I mean, there's plenty of people that talk very intelligently about rap, and I'm not saying that I'm, you know, right or anything. That's my opinion, but nothing is worse than people talking about rap in general. Like, it's like Tupac, you know, when people talk about Tupac, it's like, what Tupac do you want to believe in? It's like talking about religion, you know.
100%.
It's like, cool, do you want like the Tupac Lives Now Tupac? Because that's what, like, you can find that at All Eyes on Me. It just, there's so many different sides to artists in general, and people only focus on one because it makes for a better narrative.
Absolutely. I feel exactly what you're saying. You brought up so many interesting positions there. I would say with this album, there's an essence of you saying like, it's not all reality and it's not like, it's like a character. But I also think you are doing a disservice to a whole section of society if you don't think this is real. Yeah, there are people.
It can be. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like listening to it and I was thinking, it's them people who say, no, you shouldn't rap about that. You shouldn't rap about that. But then if you're listening to Dip Da, how are you going to learn from parts of society that you don't know anything about? It's the way he's rapping. He's an orator, right? So he has a certain vernacular, a certain style, a certain vocabulary that isn't on your agenda. You don't agree with any of it. It's problematic. But if you just dig a little bit deeper, look beneath the actual language and what is he actually saying? Like, this shit happens. Dip Da tells you all of that. And then you start listening, like you said there with I Want to Go Home. I was like, white people, not being like that, I'm not putting all white people on position, but you have Johnny Cash and Folsom Blues, right? And everyone's like, oh, this is a window into a life that we'll never see. I would argue I Want to Go Home is a more clear and probably pure image of that life of a person who's been in jail. He's citing the prisoners. He's even doing it with his pen and nickel, where you're, well, I don't know if you think, but you know that he's doing style that he's a Johnny Cash. He ain't in there with a guitar talking about Folsom Prison Blues. No. You've been locked up, Johnny. Fair enough. That's all good. But you're not one of these people. And this is their language. This is how they talk. And I feel with any hip hop, really, if you're going to start really looking at things and going, we don't want that, we don't want that, what are you really saying you don't want? You don't want to know what's happening in society? You don't want to know these people? And
also, I'd argue, look, this album was released on Island, you know, so it's like, wasn't like an underground, but like,
for sure.
At the same time, like, I think, like, you know, I think of this as somebody as like, you know, obviously like white person that has grown up on hip hop and writes about the culture, but is ultimately substantial degree an outsider looking in. You know, you have to understand, like, they're not always talking to you. Like, the artist is not always talking to you. Like, it's like, and it's like, that's what's so frustrating. I think when I see a lot of like criticism, it's like, maybe this is not for you and that's okay. And like, you're entitled. I think everyone is entitled to their feelings or emotions or opinions. And it doesn't invalidate the criticism they write necessarily, but like, it is important to remember like your lens when you are looking at something, your perspective. It is like, and the job is, I think, really of a critic is to like understand and like maybe not empathize, but understand necessarily. You know, maybe you can empathize, maybe you can't empathize, maybe you can sympathize, maybe you can't. Mm. Like, there's many ways to argue Sugar Free is an unsympathetic narrator. I mean, like, you know, it's the thing about this record. I'm like, you know, like Pimping, I'm like, it's like not even like, I'm like, well, you do what? You say, I'm like, oh no. I'm like, but like at the same time, you're like, all right, like, I love this fucking record. It's like, it doesn't, Right, because it's like true. Like, I mean, I get where people like, you know, the and it's like, it's funny how now people have such a C. Dolores Tucker attitude about it, like where it's like that has become in vogue, where the stuff that when we're kids, or a lot of people, you know, now listen to rap, maybe that's what it is, but they don't remember that like rap was demonized. Rap was like, you know, you couldn't do this. And like, I think rap, I mean, obviously there's still room. I think rap probably has more room than any other art form to be, you know, whether you want to call this transgressive, I don't know if it's fucking transgressive. Like, you know what I mean? That's a bullshit word that people throw around, like, kind of like make, you know what I mean? What does transgressive mean? What does avant-garde mean in 2021? I don't fucking know. Everything's a fucking product anyways. Like, this album was released on Island Records. You know what I mean? Like, and they fucked Sugar Free over, which is another irony of the whole thing, because you're like, this guy was like a pimp and then he got pimped by the music industry.
Yeah.
You know, like he barely made money. You know, they didn't promote this record. Like, he never got, it really is just a West Coast regional classic that only has developed more acclaim since the internet, you know, in recent years. But it's not like people are really still talking about Sugar Free. I mean, if you come to LA, like, you know, he's one of those artists where it's like, you know, I was supposed to throw a show with him at one point, like, and, you know, okay, and dealing with a corporation, and like I was like, no, like Sugar Free, and like we have like, it was gonna be like Sugar Free and like Rucci, and like, you know, and I was like, it's hard to explain to people how much he means to people, especially to, like, you know, like Black and Latino people are in LA. He really means a big deal, you know, and like obviously white people too, but like it's specifically like he, I mean, and like he is so beloved, you know. All, I mean, obviously all the way to Pomona and, you know, out there, but
for sure,
you know, people love Sugar Free in a way that it's like very hard to describe. In a way that it's like only like Mac Dre in the Bay, or like how people love Max B in New York, or like how people love Boosie in Louisiana.
Mm.
You know, there is, I mean, maybe he's not as big as Boosie was, but there is like a certain, and Quick too, I think that's like, that's part of the appeal, is like also rap is regional, and I hope it always stays that way. I think it's the power of it. You know, it's like Larry McMurtry died today, and he was talking about like, there was like a thing in the obituary, like talking about how he had a sweatshirt that said, he used to wear a sweatshirt that said minor regional novelist. And I think so funny to me, because it's like, what's wrong with being regional? Like, regional just means you're specific. Regional just means you're true to the stories of that you where you come from and the people you know. And like, to me, that's like, that doesn't take away from like someone writing The Wizard of Oz or Lord of the Rings. But like, the art that I generally gravitate towards is the most specific, the most, I mean, I love imaginative stuff, you know, like, but at the same time, like, I think I'm a realist at heart. But that's what's so beautiful about this record, I think, is like, you're right, it does have certain realism. Like, you can't deny the realism of Dipta or I Want to Go Home. At the same time, like, I'd Rather Give You My Bitch, like, is absurd.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what I mean? Like, it's a joke. Like, why are you bullshitting? He literally said, I wrote this song because I was trying to make Quick laugh in the studio.
That's it. Yeah.
And like, I mean, like, Sugar Free was clearly coked up out of his mind, I assume, kind of. I mean, I might have been told that by somebody connected to the record, but who the fuck knows? It doesn't even matter if Sugar Free was like high as hell. I mean, sounds high as hell on the record, but that's part of the beauty of it too. Like, he was like, you know, he was like young and reckless, and like, I'm not interested in subjecting people. Like, I want people to evolve. I want, you know, he claims he doesn't pimp anymore. Like, I hope he doesn't, you know, I hope he has matured beyond that. Like, you know, and I think it's, people like are flawed. And I think the most interesting artists are often flawed because it comes from somewhere. And that's the thing. Like, people don't understand, like, not to say that I am the only one of plenty of people. It's an obvious idea. And I'm not necessarily saying people have to have this Rimbaudian Jim Morrison bullshit, like, you know, Road to Excess is the Palace of Wisdom kind of nonsense. I mean, people that, whether they're artists or not, are damaged, and the lucky ones are able to put it into art. And like, just because it is all these different things doesn't make it not art. It might be like profane, like, you know, tasteless, vulgar art. But like, I don't know, most of American life is tasteless, vulgar, and profane. So like, maybe it, you know, you get what you are. Like, you know, it's an extreme, you know, it's a symbiotic thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely, man. Definitely. You can't start judging things and putting parameters in there. You have to kind of look at the whole picture, which is like, it's a capitalist picture. You're looking at everything that is made to sell. And if it's regional, if it's global, whatever it is. And
Hey, what's up? This is Black Thought, and you are now rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast.
Yo. This is Stretch Armstrong.
Ooh-wee. My name is Bobby Ducasse, a.k.a. Cool Bob Love.
You're now listening to Crate 808.
Hey, yo, what up, y'all? This is Prince Paul, and you're rocking with Crate 808 Podcast.
Yo, it's Evie Evidence, Dilated Peoples. You're rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast, my favorite shit. Let's go.
Yo, what's going on, y'all? This is Master Ace from Brooklyn, New York, and you're checking out the Crate 808 Podcast, real hip hop.
I mean, this isn't just about like the messages and the problematic stuff is there, but for me, like you said, the humor is incredible. Like he's trying to make him laugh. He sounds like a genuinely quite funny person. But also, what quick is on this? You were saying there about like Middle Eastern stuff. I thought I heard some Japanese strings. I'm hearing a sitar.
Yeah, everything. Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing, right? Like it's like okay, on a level of musicality. This is one of the most musical, especially for the period. You know, now it's like every, you know, but I don't know. It's probably more musical than anything. I mean, this is up there. I mean, maybe it's not Aquemini, but it's like not that far from Aquemini's musicality. Like Rhythmalism is up there. I mean, Dre's best work is up there. I mean, you know, it's like, and it's what's cool about this is Quick did it in a way where he's not like, okay, let me bring in a symphony orchestra, which is like the most like obvious first idea that you would get. You're like, you know, I'm going to fly it. Like he did it with like, what he had at hand. You know what I mean? This record almost sounds like, I mean, he's like the mad scientist. You know, that's what his name was. He was like, you know, he's, I remember I interviewed him. He goes, you know, I'm a thinking man. I'm left-handed. And I was like, oh, you're left-handed. Cause I'm like, I'm biased. I'm left-handed. But like that to me is like the, like most of my favorite artists are like tended. Draco's left-handed. Bug is left-handed.
That's amazing.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I didn't even know Drake was left-handed. I'm like, I talked to someone. I mean, why would I know that? I suppose I'm not, like, talking on the phone in jail. I'm like, what hand are you? But, like, you know, but at the same time, like, you're like, it's hard to explain, but, like, Quick is, like, such, like, a, he's an eccentric person, but, like, he's, like, almost like a regular-ass dude. You know what I mean? And, like, I think those are my favorite. Thug, too, is, like, so eccentric, but you're like, I don't know. Thug's, like, kind of, like, has, like, he, like the tropes of a rapper, like Thug, his name is Young Thug. I mean, it's the tropiest rap name ever. But at the same time, like, he was like an eccentric, brilliant genius. Yeah. And I think that like, you know, and what I love about a record like this is like, I hate, you know, the most annoying artists are the ones that are like trying to show you how deep of artists they are. You know, I think there's such the whole goal is to kind of like bury that pretension. As I mean, I'm historically poor at it, but I'm working always. But like, you know, it's like try to make it seem as easy as possible. Try to make it seem as effortless as possible. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the most complicated and difficult things to possibly do as an artist. And that's what's so amazing about this record. They did it in like a month. You know what I mean? Like they, it obviously just was innate. Like, I mean, they just were just two brilliant artists at the peak of their powers. And, you know, it's funny now, we live in this like late capitalist hellscape, right? Where it's like, and this goes to all mediums because, you know, I've been like working on things of my own and trying to like sell different things. And like, you think that like, oh, in the past, and I think about this in all art forms. I think about like someone like Henry Miller that could get published who was like nearly 50 or like, you know, in big or like Sugar Free, right? Like it wasn't like they were like, oh, Sugar Free, you're a genius. Like, let us give you the keys to the castle. Mm. You know, I mean, it worked for Quick, obviously, but I mean, like it didn't, you know, a lot of it was timing and luck, I think, for everybody. But, you know, this album never was like, you know, we talk about Serge Gainsbourg again. Like, I did not know that the History of Melody Nelson was not a hit. That I'm bricked. We think we like are like, oh, we think we're in this like smart world where, oh, now we'll get it. Because we have the benefit of 50 years of history and we're so enlightened now. But like, we're not. We don't. If anything, it's worse because you're like, well, if the algorithm didn't pop it or like, or the numbers didn't match up, then it must not be good. And this is a terrible way to look at art. I mean, it's just the way, I mean, not to like, again, like it's just, it's frustrating now. And it is partially because there's just not enough room. Like where would anyone write? I was able to write about Sugar Free Street Gospel for LA Weekly. It's coming up on its 25th anniversary, right? So maybe, hopefully I could do a 25th anniversary piece on it next year. That'd be, I'd be super happy to do that. I'll hit up my editor right now. But like, you know, the thing about it is like, I don't know where I'd write that now. There's no publications to write that. And more gets lost. And there's less room for art that is weird, that is unexplored, that is, you know, like cool. Like, you know, sometimes 100 Gex will pop out. And everyone's like, 100 Gex. And like, nothing against 100 Gex. Like some of the stuff is cool. Like some of the stuff I could kind of don't really care about. But that gets lost now. Like, we don't, and that's kind of what I've always tried to do with POW, but it's like this like weird little corner and like, you know, the speck of dust in the galaxy.
Yeah.
You know, in, you know.
But it shines bright, bro. It shines bright, that speck of dust. When I see you dropping stuff like, was it Strange Days? The Kurt Cobain like film that you dropped like a
feature. Oh, yeah, yeah. Thomas Hobbes.
You know? And I was like, that is amazing. That I remember going to that cinema on my own and sitting there, and I've talked to no one about that film, yet you're dropping it on the site. I'm like, this is fucking amazing.
Yeah, it's lucky to have a lot of like good writers, you know.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. Big up Thomas
Hobbes. You have to, you know, it's like a field of dreams. If you build it, they will come, and then they'll eventually foreclose in your cornfield. But yeah, donate to the Patreon. So it's just, there's not, you know, it's like, there's just unfortunately not, people care, but not the right people. I mean, the problem is the people that would care about anything are like the people, like the problem that I've always found in all of my endeavors with is like, once in a blue moon, you'll meet somebody. I mean, it's so rare. I mean, I can count on probably one finger. In fact, the amount of people that I've met in my life that have the power to cut a check. I mean, like a real check, you know, not like $500 for a blog post, or which, I mean, $500 is a lot of blog posts, but like, let's, you know what I mean? More than a story, like a real check that like will allow someone to go off and create art, right?
Yeah.
And whether it's a film or a documentary, like, and it's like, you know, I've met a lot of people that are like, well, we can do this documentary for like $3,000. I'm like, you can't get cameras for $3,000.
Yeah.
Like to rent, you know what I mean? Like, and the cameraman, it's like $700 a day. It's like, you can't do that.
Yeah.
But like, you know, it's like, it's interesting, and we're kind of going away from the point, but I think that's the point of a podcast is like, yeah. You know, I'm rambling, but like, for instance, the Nipsey Hussle thing, right? I just did a book review this week in the LA Times. This kind of goes with a broader point about a sugar-free. Nipsey was very much in that lineage up until his last album, where he finally, at the age of 33 or 32, whenever he was when he dropped it, got the big break, right? Like Atlantic pushed it, and like The Machine did, and like GQ was like, all right, we're going to take these amazing photos of you and Lauren London on a horse, right? Yeah. That horse had to be expensive for rent. You know what I mean? Had to be a couple $100 at least for a horse. I'm sure that photo shoot was like $30,000, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a fucking lot of, you know, most, I mean, that's the budget of my magazine, The Land, is like $30,000 on a good issue.
Yeah.
Including publishing, you know, including printing and writing and editing. I mean, I don't get money for the editing, but
yeah.
So like, he finally got like the look, right? But like the tragedy, and this is the tragedy of all late capitalist art probably, but especially for hip hop. And especially for really anyone that's trying to do things that's cool, that's underground, that's outside. And people will point to a success story, but like they're more far and few between than you would think, you know. For every Freddie Gibbs and you look at a Freddie Gibbs, you look at a Flying Lotus, Thundercat, I think of guys that just got a Grammy nomination. It's like these guys are in their late 30s. They've been grinding for 20 years now, you know, like or less. And it's like, that's the only way to do it, you know, most of the time. But with Nipsey, you know, to go back to my original point, or 8 points down the road, he didn't get those looks in his lifetime, especially before he, you know, especially before that last year, but really for most of his lifetime. I remember trying to pitch at LA Times, LA Weekly story. Like it was for both. And it was a tumultuous time. It wasn't anybody's fault per se. But I did this in 2009, 2010, right when he dropped Hustle in the House. I was like, this guy kind of has the streets. We need to do a story. Like, I mean, I would have loved, and like, no one cared. No one cared. Of course, when he died, you know, there's the biggest thing, which there should have been, but my point is there should have been the whole time. I'm happy Nipsey's getting these big mass market biographies, and like Ava DuVernay's doing a streaming project with a documentary, and there's probably going to be 3 podcasts, and like I'm sure there'll be more books. Great. I'm super happy about it. I will watch them. I will probably read them. Probably won't listen to the podcast. I don't really listen to many podcasts, but theoretically, I love the people that are doing the podcast. I've been on it too. They're amazing, smart people who are the people that should be doing it. But like, nobody wants to do something on Boosie, and like, you, they'll be like, oh, well, he's problematic. But it's the same thing that we're talking about with Sugar Free. I'm like, yeah, like, do you want me to tell you the details of Boosie's life? Do you want me to tell the details of Sugar Free's life? It doesn't excuse the bad behavior, but it might allow you to understand. And like, isn't that the point of what everything is? You're supposed to try to understand it so we can fix it
and grow
and make. And then make it better and evolve, and like hopefully we'll be a better society, and hopefully have less people that are doing terrible things. Eventually, you know, we're supposed to, you know, instead of just demonizing it, which I don't think helps anybody. I think it's accurate, but I don't think it helps anybody necessarily. My point is, like, you know, I spent all summer after the uprising, right, in LA. You know, I was out here and I was covering a lot of the events and wrote like a big story for LA Magazine. And, you know, I had been trying to develop a Boosie documentary with C-Murder about them both being in Angola. And, like, I mean, it's a really powerful, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but basically for those who don't know, Boosie's this legendary rapper from Louisiana, said a lot of fucked up things, but like ultimately means so much to like the people of the South, and he's just an embodiment of like the Black American struggle, and he's just I think an amazing artist, you know, and really complicated, and like, you know, song for every occasion, and it's kind of like a Sugar Free in a way, where it's like Boosie has a song like Loose as a Goose, but he also has a song called going through some things, or like Webby I Know, or you know, or like, it just like he has all these like, there's just a song for it, you know, and Sugar Free to a degree, kind of not, he maybe doesn't have any like heartfelt, you know, bluesy songs with Boosie, but
yeah,
but you know, I was trying to, he basically, Boosie ended up on trial for murder, you know, it was, I mean, I covered the murder trial in Angola in 2012. I mean, it's just an insane trial, but like I could barely get, I ended up getting covered for Rolling Stone. No one wanted me to cover that. There was not a single publication. This is 2012. There was actually money.
Yeah.
When I tell you, I mean, I must have lost $3,000 covering that trial. Damn. Like, I was paying for the hotel myself. I had to stay out there for like 4 weeks, you know, food, everything I had to take care of, because I really believed in the story and I wanted to do justice, right? And everyone's like, why don't you write a book about it? I'm like, no one will give me money to write a book about it. You know, like, no one's going to be like, hey, we'll give you, I'm talking like a low figure. No one's gonna be like, we'll give you $25,000 to write this book. No one will give me that. Maybe I could get $5,000, but like, that's so much time. You have to eat. Like what am I, $5,000? I'm gonna spend 6 months of my life for $5,000. How does that math add up? Like, what planet are we on? And my point is with Nipsey, Boosie was as important to the South as Nipsey was to the West, unquestionably. Maybe more, maybe less, I don't know, but they're about even figures. No one gives a fuck, and Boosie had a even crazier life than Nipsey, as far as I'm concerned. Nipsey had a crazy life, don't get me wrong. And no one wanted to do this. No one's like, so all this shit goes down. So I was like, trying to sell something about Boosie. No one gave a fuck about Boosie. Yeah, it's mostly white people. And I mean, the reality is, yes, it is mostly still white people in positions of power and who write the checks. And, you know, they have token people that they hire to do diversity, but most of the people writing the checks are still white people.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm not trying to be like a white guy that's like, how dare they, you know, but at the same time, like, there is a lot of validity to the complaints where they're like, yeah, there are white people at the top who are not writing checks because they have no connection to the culture in any way, shape, or form and only want to exploit it. And you're seeing this now with Nipsey, you know, and the people that are doing it are good. My point is that it should be for a bunch of people. So anyways, Boosie, no one cared about. So I was like, okay, well, fine. Well, what an incredible story it was that Boosie and C-Murder were side by side in Angola on death row and made an album together. Like, C-Murder, the brother of Master P, a platinum artist on No Limit Records. What an insane story about the fucked up American criminal justice system and the struggles of you know, Black Americans, and just like, all these powerful ideas, and these are great artists, you know, maybe C-Murder a little less than Boosie, but nonetheless, I fuck with C-Murder. Like, he's a good rapper. Like, No Limit's incredible. They didn't, you know, they're one of the most influential labels in music history.
Yeah.
You know, like O-Town in the South, more practically, absolutely, you know what I mean? And like, you know, so then this summer, of course it goes nowhere, right? I'm spending years. I mean, I can't even tell you how many meetings and all this free work that people are like, write out an outline and this and that. And, you know, I had a production company that was super interested, and they were so passionate. And like, so they made this incredible sizzle reel, which I don't know if you know what that is. It's like a trailer.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Of course it goes nowhere. So right then the uprising hits the summer, right? And like, then, you know, all these big agents are like going to the production company. They're like, now's the time. You know, people are pretending to care about Black people. Yeah. I said that, of course, it's a joke. Like, no one take it, you know, but that's the, you know, the parody of it is like, all these executives were pretending to care. And, you know, it's like, you see all this like corporate activism. It's like, we stand, but it's like, you stand when it's an Instagram statement. You don't necessarily stand when it's like putting your money where your mouth is.
A practical stand.
And so, yeah, like, I mean, like, we weren't asking for $5 million. We're just like, can we make this amazing? We had, and I won't name the executive producers, but I mean, one of the biggest, one of the biggest, like, independent Southern rap labels were the executive producers, like, you know, like management company / labels, huge, like the biggest artists in the world. You would have thought for sure, like, I mean, Cosign, you know, we sent it out to 25 people, I think. We got two meetings. The two meetings were like, you know, nothing against these people, but you just see them and you're like, you know, it's like, you know, that's not going to happen. Like, you don't understand any of this stuff. And it's like, you know, it, it breaks your heart because you're just like, these stories need to be told. These are important stories. Yeah. And there's going to be 55 Nipsey stories. And just like there's 55 Tupac. I mean, I wrote a Tupac and Biggie book. I didn't want to write a Tupac and Biggie book. Mm. I'm happy I did. Like, I'm proud of it. Like, my co-author and me, I think, did a really good job. But at the same time, like, what the fuck did the world need another Biggie and Tupac book? I wish that someone would invest it in a Boosie book or a Draco book or these things that I've spent my whole... I spent a lot of this last decade covering, you know? Mm. And no one gives a fuck. They only say that they give a fuck, but they don't. Or I should say no one gives a fuck. Because plenty of people give a fuck. That's the irony of the situation. Mm. So many people give a fuck. But none of these corporate entities that are trying to, you know, just like, you know, oh, well, is it Drake? How about you do a Drake thing? I'm like, no, it's Draco. And Draco just did a song with Drake, but they don't care again. The irony of the situation is I bet that someone like Drake, who would people, you know, think of like, would be more apt to do a documentary or something like this than like, you know, a lot of people that, you know, aren't, you know, considered of that kind of magnitude of celebrity. And it's just, I don't know. And I think Sugar Free and Quick folds into this kind of mentality because it's like, I have always wanted to do a Quick documentary, but like, no one is going to fucking give money to do a Quick documentary because they're like, how about a Dre documentary? And you're like, well, they just did the fine one. But you're like, that's not a Dre documentary. You're like, well, Dre won't do it. But you're like, he's so big though. You know what I mean? Or like, how about a Snoop documentary? And you're like, great, I will watch that. It's like, but like, did you watch the Biggie documentary?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Yeah, it was cool. I liked it, but like, I didn't love it because I've seen fucking 1,000 Biggie documentaries.
Exactly,
like,
that's it.
Biggie documentaries do you need to do?
Yeah.
And like, cool, I'm really glad it exists. Mm. I'm always happy when like, but like, there are 2 Tekashi documentaries and that's all you need to know.
That's where my mind went, bro. You know, when you're saying this, there's a disconnect. There's a disconnect of, I don't know where this is going to get fixed. I see Revolt is on the charge doing its thing, trying to do its thing. I see there's other companies that are trying to step up and tell stories that I may not have heard. Yet if I love this culture, I should know of them. But the problem I find is I don't know. There's like these companies and corporations, some that I've worked for are like fucking oil tankers, bro. Like you tell, it's not going to turn on time when you want it. And and unfortunately, it's halfway through that turn, they probably change their agenda anyway and go, actually, we should turn back or there's something else. And
well, yeah, I mean, I was tweeting about this with the original version of the Boosie documentary, you know, like before this most recent version, when no one wanted to buy it, even though all of a sudden criminal justice was a hot button issue in America, even, you know what I mean? Something I've been trying to, you know, talk about for a decade at that point, practically.
Yeah.
And I mean, look, I'm again, like, please, I would hope that no one would think that I'm like, there are many of more people that are way more qualified that have been talking about criminal justice than me. I'm just like a small kind of thing in my corner, but it is something I'm passionate about. And, you know, something I've tried to report on because I'm just, you know, and the more you report on it, the more you see it and the more fucked up it becomes. But, you know, I had, again, like 25 meetings in 2016, probably 2015, 2016 with MTV. And I, you know, I cannot speak highly enough about the executives that I was meeting with. I'm still friends with one of them. Like, it was, they were really smart, passionate people that really, really, really deeply cared. And, you know, I had these big shot managers and like, who of course like abandoned me when the project failed, because that's how they all are. You know, they didn't give a fuck about it. And, but they were good. Like, you know what I mean? They were sharp guys, you know, and I had 3 executives, like the heads of the company, fly out to this meeting with MTV, and MTV flies me out to New York. And I'm like, cool, I'm going to finally, this is fucking going to happen. And I'm going to tell the story. And it's going to be really cool. It's going to be about Baton Rouge. And I'm going to pair with people from Baton Rouge to make sure the story is told faithfully and respectfully and like thoughtfully. And I'm not going to try to be some like white outside savior bullshit. Like, I'm not trying to do that. I'm really trying to like bring in these voices and empower them and like tell the, you know, make sure that the story is told accurately and with due diligence and respect. And so, you know, you go to the meeting and you're like, I'm with these big shop producers and like, you know, the creative executives from MTV that I've worked with are there and like they're great. And like, then you have the meeting and you're like, some guy walks in, of course, it's 6'2" white guy. And you're like, oh, you got hired because you're kind of handsome and tall. And like, what? And you're like, oh no. And like, of course he's stupid as hell. And then, you know, he starts talking and then he's like, and then like I did my math and I was like, oh, this is the guy that gave Tyga a show. And like, hey, I love Rack City. And I like been late Tyga singles, whatever. Like, I'm a Tyga apologist, but like, I would not have given Tyga King a show. I just wouldn't. That is just not something I would have been like, that's who needs a TV show, is Tyga. And mind you, there was a Waka Flocka show that was being developed that was fantastic.
Yeah.
And I saw the demo. They did not give Waka Flocka a show. And like, it was great. I saw like that. So it was like the Waka Flocka files. It was like Waka Flocka song. It was fucking incredible.
I'm
it was
so fun. Yeah.
No, it would have been good. Like, that was my point, is like, people love Flocka.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and the guy looks and he's like, you know, we're telling him about this like harrowing story about like, you know, the racism and then the police corruption and the political corruption and like the violence of Baton Rouge and like this like amazing, powerful music that's kind of coming up from the mud, basically.
Mm.
And the guy's like, but like, what are the jokes? You know, and you're like,
oh my God.
But like, that's the reality. And like, that's why things, it'll never change. You know, I mean, maybe like, I mean, I would love that. I mean, one of my dreams was like to, you know, but people don't, the only way is like if Seth Rogen decided to borrow, like he was like, but like, it's the problem is like, I mean, Seth Rogen's like a cool guy, like, you know, whatever. But like, I don't blame the guy for being into weed, like whatever. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I like, but like, you know what I mean? Like, most people that get famous and like, I think we're gonna pivot to weed.
Yeah.
Like, nobody wants to be involved because like, it's just, you know, it's a shame. I mean, like, I'm sure eventually, like maybe like a Jay-Z or someone or a Nas will have the capital to do something more substantial, I would hope.
You'd hope so. Absolutely. The stuff you're saying there is, it makes me think about the hip hop I love and have been brought up with, how much of that came from a very independent soul. As in
almost all of it.
Yeah. And Quick was one of them ones. I always saw him as very independent, even though he had Easy's ear, he was with Death Row. He was playing this role where it was like, it was weird because at that point, I'm looking at someone thinking you're kind of making your own path. And of course you need the big companies to push you to a global scale. But I honestly think DJ Quick, if he hadn't had that, would still be in rooms clapping for Sonics, like, oh, this isn't the right room for this drum, you know, or whatever. And I feel the stories you want to tell, the stories that are going to be told, one, they help us learn and grow in as a society, but also it makes, always remember, man, there's people out there that we've not even heard, that are in their rooms, in their garages, who've got fucking nothing, and yet they're making incredible music. And that is something I always find, I find more and more gems, especially with your work and great writers out there who do peel back these layers and be like, guess what, guys, check this story out. And man, I'd have to big you up for that.
Hey guys, this is Jerobi from A Tribe Called Quest. You're listening to the Crate 808 Podcast.
Yo, yo, what's up, man? It's your man El Zai, and you're rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast. You know what I'm saying? Where you can check out, you know, artists like me.
Hey, it's Steve Rifkin from Loud Records. You're rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast. Spread the word. These guys are dope. The questions they ask and the interview is amazing. Enjoy yourself. Be safe and be healthy.
1212, you know what it is. This your man SKYZOO Sky Zoo, live out the borough. And this is the Crate 808 Podcast. Make sure you subscribe, rate, review, and most importantly, share that love and put your peoples on.
Peace and light. This is Cy-Rock, rocking with Crate 808 Podcast. And you want to check out everything hip hop on crate808.com.
Yo, this is Juggernaut, Nottingham City, NG area. You're rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast. Make sure you keep it locked in. There's so many gems drop. Crate808.com.
Hey, yo, this is the one and only R.A., the Rugged Man. And I'm rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast with my man Cam.
But yeah, I appreciate your passion on that point because it's getting me riled up, man. I'm like, fuck, man, we need to change this shit, you know?
It kind of can't change unless, like, the people at the top are doing it, because at the end of the day, it's like, you know, every time I, like, you know, I've had a lot of books out, I've had a lot of, like, not published, but, like, you know, I've had a lot of, you know, talks to people or movies or TV or, you know, it's like, it's really easy to get people at the bottom that understand it, you know, like, I, you know, and not even at the bottom, at the middle, at the high end of the corporate spectrum, but like, to get the buyer, like the final boss, is always, you know, it's always somebody that's like, it's just the way the system, I think, works, where it's like, it's, you know, it's like the biggest assholes, you know, the people that want power are usually terrible people, you know? And like, if you want power, like, to get to that high level, you've probably traded in something, you know, probably your soul. In some respect, yeah, you know. It doesn't come without a cost. And unfortunately, like, the people that get to the top are not the people that a Boosie or a Nipsey or, you know, to some degree a Sugar Free and a Quick are speaking to. Mm. They're speaking to people that are kind of on the ground level.
Yeah.
Not like 5,000 feet in the sky, you know, or in the top of the suite.
I can't imagine a CEO putting on this album. And what's the first lyric he says? Which is, I'm sugar free. I don't give a fuck who you is. And it's like, come on. Like that is setting, if you're not into that, then yeah, you're not going to be into it. But, also, I love that brashness because look what's born out of that, which is, well, when I hear someone like Sugar Free and stuff like that, you hear a lot of other people in that same style and stuff like that. But yeah, man, no, I appreciate that. I was going to just actually go back to the album just quickly because I just wanted to talk to you actually about some of the actual favorite, because for me, it's your history with this record. I was like, how did Jeff even hear this album? Like, what, where were you in your life when someone said, by the way, listen to, you know, Street Gospel?
I mean, everyone knows about Street Gospel in LA. Like,
oh, is it? You just grew up with it. Like, it's just the album that
everyone, I mean, it was on the radio. You know what I mean? Like, Sugar Free was doing Nail Bonds commercials. He was doing, like, you know, he does like soul food commercials. Like, Sugar Free, like, does, there's like four, like, he does Bail Bonds commercials. There's like an amazing soul food restaurant commercial he did.
Right.
There's, I'm like blanking, but there's like several Sugar Free commercials that are just like legendary.
Right.
That
playing
in LA. Oh, auto insurance. Like Sugar Free still, I think recently, up until a few years ago, was still doing auto insurance commercials on the radio in LA. I mean, like Sugar Free is like, I don't know. It's like, he's just like such a hero. So it's just like, I mean, you could, I mean, if you stay ready, I don't know if I quite understood how good Sugar Free was though until later.
Right.
It was like part of the, you know what I mean? It was part of the wallpaper, the tapestry of Los Angeles, probably more accurate. But like, but it just, it's just like when I got older, when I kind of had a deeper appreciation for music other than like, oh yeah, he raps good and he's funny. Like, you know what I mean? And the beat is hard. Like, that's all you kind of know when you're 15, 16. Mm-hmm. But like, when I got older, you kind of realized, oh shit, like, wow, what he's doing rhythmically in the pockets and how the way he's rapping is like nothing I've ever heard. And what Quick is doing like sonically and the instrumentation and like the melodies and the what he's writing and how the way the beats just shift and move and breathe and have like this like organic character into themselves. Like, you know, that is something that you kind of appreciate when you get older. And, you know, like with that, you know, you sort of understand kind of Sugar Free as, you know, more of a flawed human being who has this like unbelievable bravado and dark streak, which is forged from like a fucked up childhood. And, you know, he's reconciling with these things and he's in jail and he's still struggling with the trauma of the abuse, but he's at the same time probably abusive himself. And it is something that necessarily, I think I'm in very much in favor of people like grappling with the complications inherent, but like, at the same time, like, you know, I remember being a kid and being like, remember reading all these doggy stuff. I'm like, how dare Snoop be such a misogynist? And you're like, well, yes, misogyny is bad. I'm not defending the misogyny. Snoop has also been married for like 30 years. And like, he's like a pretty dedicated family man. He's a Snoop Youth Football League. The reality is a lot more complicated sometimes than like we want in the lyrics. And like, you know, kind of goes back to what we're talking about at the beginning. And Sugar Free, I mean, being a kid in LA, like, you know, you in the 90s, it just like, I mean, Sugar Free, Quick. Dre, of course. But I mean, LA radio used to be really cool. Like, I mean, I know some of the guys now and like, I fought with most of them, you know, about shit. And like, they just like, but it's like how everything is in America now. It's like, you know, they're like, well, we test the song vigorously. And I'm like, okay, that's not how humans work. Like, humans don't work. Like, that's not, like, people just like what they've heard a million times. I'm like, but that's the point. And I'm like, no, but like, people used to like all this stuff that was weird. And if you played it a lot, then they would like it. That's just how it goes. And they'll be like, we've done radio studies. I'm like, again, I don't care. Your studies are bullshit. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, use your fucking ear, use your fucking brain.
Yeah.
Don't listen to the algorithm. Like, it doesn't, it's like, you not, no, but don't be a moron. Be like, well, the algorithm gave it to me. I mean, shit, I found a bunch of great stuff in the release radar on Spotify. Like, are you kidding? Like, there's a weird algorithm I've hacked into where I find all kinds of amazing regional rappers. It's sick. I'm happy to use technology. Radio in LA used to, you know, they used to like, I mean, you'd hear all these deep cuts and now it sounds like everywhere else. And the problem is people want the job and they want the clout. I mean, that's everything in this fucking culture is like clout, like as though that's real. as though, I mean, fame is real if you do good things with it. But like fame for the sake of fame is literally the most worthless, toxic thing ever. Like fame is only good for you to like put on people that deserve to be put on and like do good art that like is weird. But now like that you're famous, like I think Kendrick Lamar is a perfect example of that. Like who got famous and like used it for the right reasons. I like Kendrick. I love a lot of his music. He's not my favorite LA rapper of all time, but he's probably in my top five, maybe top five, top 10. You know, I think probably Kendrick could probably put Sugar Free over. I mean, and like, that's another thing, right? The influence of this record is like in Kendrick. I mean, like,
for sure.
You know, he is flipping Sugar Free verses and cadences, like in words, like Mossberg, they flipped for King Kunta is a Mossberg flip. And that was like, you know, Sugar Free has a quick, Mossberg and Album Connected that they all did. Mossberg was another brilliant Compton rapper that kind of got killed really young.
How is that album? What's that album that he brought out? I can't remember now. Nonfiction was it?
Yeah, I think that was. Yeah.
So I've never heard that, and I don't know. So yeah, I need to go check that. But yeah,
if there's Mossberg was really good. I mean, like he's sort of, you know, like most artists, like, you know, kind of that kind of die really young. They kind of are a little like more lauded than maybe they otherwise would have been.
Right.
I think that's cool. You know, he was a dope rapper. I mean, Mossberg, like Mossberg's another rapper in LA, like where people like really respect him.
Okay.
He was like going, I mean, he was going to be Quick's next guy right after Sugar Free, and then he was tragically hurt. And yeah, but it's just stuff like that. And it's like, that's the problem, right? Is like these guys get lost to history. And I like, you know, it's like crazy, man. It was like, you know, shit, I've forgotten a lot of stuff. You know what I mean? People forget stuff. Like, I mean, even people like probably think like, I'm like, there is so much shit I've forgotten about rap. Like, I don't remember. Like, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, of course.
Like, I shouldn't smoke that much weed. But
but then you're right. It might not have been as good.
Everyone's influenced by Sugar Free. There's not a single rapper. I mean, Draco is funny. I like asked, because Draco to me was always the one that like, the first time in 2017 to meet him. And I was like, your blood. You know, so he was like, you know, Sugar Free a little more. But like, again, like, for LA, like, you know, the pimping thing was like, I think I read somewhere that Rappin' Forte and Sugar Free were cousins. I don't know if that's true, but I want to.
Oh, right. Okay.
You know, Sugar Free is one of the only like pimp rappers of LA. The Bay, obviously, it's like such a tried and true staple of Bay Area rap, from Too Short to Rappin' Forte to, you know, everyone now, you know, like Andre Nicotina sort of has that pimp bot. Like,
yeah.
Mac Maul and all that shit is like, you know, pimp shit. And Drew Down, of course. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? That's all Bay shit. And and there's the Oakland shit in Sugar Free that you can't take away, because he did grow up for a while in Oakland. And yeah, I mean, it's cool. Like, I mean, that's the, that's, you know, people get so provincial about rap, you know, for good reasons. I mean, I was saying like earlier about how important regional rap is.
For sure.
But such a, one of the beautiful things is the kind of the blend. And one of the things I've always loved about rap, it's like, you know, G-Funk was so instrumental in like mob rap and Bay Area rap. And then it was so influential in like Texas rap. And like, you know, DJ Screw's favorite rapper was Sebo from Sacramento. And it's always just been this like give and take of ideas. And obviously the East Coast influenced everything from the get-go. And yeah, I mean, it's one of the things that's really beautiful about it. And like, I think regional rap is still flourishing. I mean, at the end of the day, there are still, maybe there's not another Sugar Free, but there's a lot of people that are like huge. I mean, this kid Brist from Sacramento was like one of my favorite rappers, and he got murdered last year. And you know, it's sad. There was no obituary for him. There were obituaries for him, but there was no like real tribute to him. And it sucks that I'm the one that would have had to write it, because I'm like, that shouldn't be the case. Like, it should have been, there should be papers in Sacramento that like are public, you know, there aren't. And there's good writers in Sacramento, I'm sure, but like they just don't have the resources. You know, that, I mean, that's the other thing too. Like, it's hard to kind of talk about all these artists now without talking about the lack of resources for journalists to properly commemorate them. And I think people don't necessarily, you know, and I'm sorry, like a DJ Vlad interview is valuable, like, for, you know, like on some level, like, because like I can watch a DJ Vlad interview, but that is not the same. And like, there's something so much more valuable about the written word, especially when it's a good writer that's really doing justice to an artist and reporting and talking to these people and compiling them into something that has a real narrative behind it. And that's something that's we're really losing really fast. I don't know how it is in England. I'm sure it's not great, but I'm sure it's better than it is here.
Yeah, well, to be fair, I'm not plugged into the journalistic thing. I talk to journos on this pod, and it's a grind. It's a grind. Like everyone knows that. But like, I find those unearthed gems through text and video now, and it's interesting when you say that, because that makes me think like, I find now I can really drill into subjects more than I could before. So, for instance, the Arm & Hammer thing, right? So Arm & Hammer are like coming out with, and they're getting blowing up right now with Haram just this weekend that we're talking. Yeah. And because of people at Dad Bod Rap Pod for a few years, they've been talking them, got that's been the people who are peeling back that layer for me where I'm like, oh, what is this world? And I love electro music and noise and industrial stuff. I was more into that back in the day. And when I heard that, I was like, oh, these guys obviously are listening to what I'm listening to, but it's in a hip hop world. So I understand what you're saying, man, about that, the fact that no one's writing these articles that are shining a light on people we should know about. But just from my perspective over here as a fan, as a person who just loves to hear about his culture and read about it, I learn more now than I ever learned back in the day, because it was so restrictive back then, and it was so much more about someone handing you a mixtape rather than someone telling you on a blog about a mixtape. Do you know what I mean?
I feel you. Like, I feel like there's more of a beauty in that. I mean, not to say that, like, I'm not really happy for Arm & Hammer. I mean, I am insanely happy for Arm & Hammer.
For sure, absolutely, yeah.
Amazing that, like, they're doing. I mean, I love Woods and Elucid and my homie Castro. Curly Castro's on the record. And, like, over an Alchemist beat and crushes it. And that made me so happy to hear that. I mean, that was one of the best things that I've heard all year. I mean, musically, but just, you know, seeing someone like Castro grind for a long time and just kill it.
That puffy
when
line.
He got the chance. Yeah, but I don't know. I think there's a beauty in scarcity. I think there's a beauty in mystery. And I think it's completely, it's like, you know, it's gone, you know, like, not to get too dark about it, but it's like kind of gone. I mean, like, Burial, like, the last one left, Madeline, to a certain degree.
Burial, man. I feel you.
Yeah, Burial's my Mozart.
He's my Neo in my Matrix, man. Like, he's the guy that is, I hope that stays pure. I mean, again, what is pure? I feel like he is. I feel
Burial,
like he is, but
Burial was the only one. You know,
I'm glad you brought that up, man.
He showed his face and just retreated back into the shadows.
Yeah, man. What a man.
Doesn't promote it, just makes great music.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the right example where it's like, you know, but at the same time, I mean, like, Burial, I mean, he didn't get lucky because he's obviously a genius and, like,
for sure.
But he got lucky that he got Code 9 discovered him.
Absolutely.
You know, he didn't get lucky, you know what I mean? He's lucky there's a Code 9 that exists.
Yeah.
Because Burial could not have gone to a major label.
Mm.
And Code 9, you know, like, deserves a ton of credit too, because, like, he was the right place, right time, and right man. And, like, kind of just what he did with Hyperdub, you know, I don't know. I want to believe it could happen again today, but that was a really, that was a time where, like, people were reading blogs and, you know, like, what's his name? Mark Fisher is writing about it. And, like, you know, like, the Wire still had, like, a lot of influence at the time. And, like, you know, Pitchfork, you know, I mean, obviously still has influence, but, like, it was Pitchfork, you know, it probably, like, the early internet days, of giving raves. And, like, you know, back then, like, you know, when, if you got a rave like that, like, you were on. Mm. And that was kind of a connection to things. And, you know, it's the older I get, the more I realize how, like, there are a lot of stories where it just kind of doesn't happen. You know, then there's, like, somebody like Kamasi Washington. It's like, you know, I remember that. I mean, he was grinding and he was about 35 years old and finally put out that record, Thundercat. I mean, he probably would have made it because Thundercat kind of was already huge at the time. But, you know, I remember I did a blog post about him, and, like, I think Ryan Shriver, Pitchfork, was at the time, and he saw my blog. I think I did an LA Weekly thing, and then he saw the LA Weekly article, and then, you know, Kamasi ends up getting the Best in Music to Pitchfork, and it starts to snowball that kind of led to Kamasi Washington being the air quote face of jazz, you know? Which is awesome. Kamasi's incredible. Like, I'm a huge fan. And, like, he deserves it as much as anybody I've ever seen, but it's just one of those things where it's like, there's a lot of luck sometimes that has to get involved, and like, Sugar Free didn't really get the luck, you know? He did to a degree where we were still talking about him, you know, and he was doing all these commercials and, like, you know, he was a legend, but he never got the, you know, he never got the E40 thing, as I guess, when, you know what I mean? Because think about it now, it's like, E40, people know E40, E40 is getting a Versus. No one's giving Sugar Free a Versus.
Yeah.
I wish but maybe they will, you know, but E40 got that thing, and no one is giving Quick, and I mean, maybe they will give Quick and Chicken Free versus Incredible, but, you know, and, like, a lot of it is, like, you know, in E40 at the right moment, Hyphy came along and he had the right song, and it kind of just, like, took off, and then he got that second wind where he had this career, whereas, you know, he, like, Sugar Free, circa 2004, is about the same age as E40, but it just doesn't happen for him the same way.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe that was his own fault, and E40 is obviously a genius and brilliant, and the definition of, you know, sick-witted is an incredible label, and like, that's not saying E40, he deserves every bit of the claim, but it just didn't happen for Sugar Free the same way, which is a shame, because Sugar Free, you know, doesn't maybe have the body of work of an E40, but he definitely at his heights is like, I mean, as good as anyone that's ever rapped.
Yeah. How was he? You've interviewed Sugar Free a few times, have you?
No, I talked to him once. I've been like, again, but that's the point. This is my whole point, is that
no one's
when I was at the LA Weekly, you know, and there's nothing against my editor there. Like, I mean, I love the guy. He was a great guy. But like, I remember, must have been 2013, I don't know, whatever. But I was one of my editors there, and I was like, we need to do a cover story on Sugar Free. It was always my dream to do a cover story on Sugar Free. I was like, I just want to go to Pomona with Sugar Free. Like, just take me around the sites of Holt and Pomona and like where you're from and like, you know, where you grew up, where you live now, whatever. But he was like, well, I don't know who Sugar Free is. And I was like, I don't know. and then he's like, you need to explain it, because the editor in chief definitely doesn't know who Sugar Free is.
Yeah.
And again, a person I deeply admire, both of them, they're great. Like, you know, I never say a negative word about them, but it just shows kind of to, it's just the way that the game works. It's just like, unfortunately, Sugar Free didn't have big publicists. Sugar Free, I wouldn't, you know what I mean? Like, it was hard for me to get a hold of him. I tried to do the show with him. Of course, it fell through because Sugar Free wasn't a big enough name. Yeah. I got to talk to Sugar Free on the phone for like 10 minutes, and I just was like, you know, like telling him how much he meant. And like, but yeah, I mean, I still want to do a Sugar Free story. But again, it's like, I mean, I guess I'll have to do the 25th anniversary if I'm lucky.
Yeah.
I have to find a location that cares. But, you know, it's just how it is. And it's like, you know, I mean, people are like, oh, you can find a publication. But it's like they don't understand how much time and money and time it really effort it takes to do good journalism. And it's like, you can't just read, like, did you read the Vanilla Ice story I wrote?
Oh no, I did. Yeah, was that for The Ringer, that one?
Yeah. So I mean, The Ringer is great. Like, Ringer is like one of the few places that is really supporting journalism, paying writers what they deserve. 100%. I mean, like,
oh right, brilliant.
My editor there's one. Like, one of the best editors in sales. He's an incredible guy. And you know, all the editors there are really sharp, and they have been. It's lucky that I'm able to publish at a place like that, because there's like, there really aren't places like that anymore. It was so hard to get Vanilla Ice on the phone, and like, believe it or not, it was a fucking nightmare. Like, I had to like talk to his manager multiple times, and like, like, please. I was like, you don't understand. I was like, I don't know why I had, like, I just wanted to write it. I don't know. Like, I just kind of had the idea in my head. And you know, Vanilla Ice was great when I interviewed him. We talked about 2.5 hours and was super generous with his time. It just like, it takes like 2 weeks of time. You know what I mean? And like, for $500, I can't afford to do that for $5 for 2 weeks of work. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and like, most places don't have the budgets. And that's not their fault. It's the way the game works at this point. You know, it's like, it's like The Wire. It's like, the game is the game. Yeah. But the game is hung up now, you know? And like, it just, there's not, unfortunately, there's just not the resources available to do the kind of journalism. Like, no one is going to be like, well, we'll pay you like $2,000 or $3,000 to go write like a 4,000 word story on Sugar Free. And back in the day, I mean, like, you know, it was $1 a word for like even like minor writers or whatever, not, you know, not to say major, but like, you know what I mean? Like, you could be like a decent writer and getting $1 a word, $1.50 a word, $2 a word.
Yeah.
And now, like, if you get $1 a word in, like, 30 years later, that shit's, it's like a windfall.
Yeah.
You know? Like, most places don't pay $1 a word. That's like the top of the top. And maybe if you're at the New Yorker, maybe even more. I don't fucking know. Vanity Fair, I assume, pays more. But like, I mean, these are magazines now that are like 70 pages. Or the Vanity Fair is. Like, Vanity Fair used to be a fucking, like, you could kill a bird with it. And it's just how it is. And that is what I'm talking about, where it's like, you don't get the quality of journalism, because someone like me, or like, more like, I mean, it's more for my younger friends that are really gifted journalists that have not had the opportunities to really get prosper that. The way they have. And they don't get the looks. And it's like, you know, I'm like, one of the things like I did in the last year is I moved into a like apartment where I could have like an office, which is the greatest thing that ever happened to me. Okay. And I was like, you know, just thinking about like my career, and I, you know, got all these old cover stories framed, and like, you know, just like the things that meant something to me, because like, I've always been reticent about to do it, because I was like, I just don't like the ego trip involved with it, where you're like, look at me, like, I've done all these things, I'm fucking important, and I hate people like that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I never want to be one of these important seeming motherfuckers, because like, no one's important, but you know, everyone is important. Everyone is important, and no one's important, you know? But like, you know, I got all these things framed because I was like, fuck it, like, you're getting old as shit. Like, you know, you might as well, like, commemorate it in some way, just to remember that your life has not been worthless. And, you know, and like, so, but I have all these like covers, you know, and I'm like looking, talking to the listening podcast, but like, you know, just looking around, and I'm like, you know, I have like LA Times like covers, and I have like XXL covers, and it's like the Face just relaunched LA Weekly. Wax Poetics, and it's like, I mean, sweet. I go through it. It's like LA Weekly doesn't really exist in any way. I mean, it was bought and gutted by evil right wingers.
Yeah.
Like the LA Times still exists, thankfully. XXL like doesn't have a budget, to my knowledge, to like to do these really big covers that they certainly not the way that they used to. I mean, I think it's all staffers at this point. Mm. Wax Po is coming back, but Wax Po is like, you know, it was gone for years and years.
A long
time,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, I have a Time Out cover that's gone. Fader Magazine is gone. You know, it's online now, but there's a print magazine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Los Angeles Magazine, okay, still there. But like, so I'm just looking around. It's like 75% of the places that I have cover stories for, you know, are no longer extant or online only.
Mm.
And the younger generation doesn't get those opportunities. There will never be a sugar-free LA Weekly cover, you know? And that to me is like kind of something I will forever mourn. Mm. And I guess for the rest of my life, I'll probably be like, you know, like, I think it's important to remind people of the past that once existed.
Yeah.
And, but also not to, you know, it's hard. And I don't have any of the answers. You know, I do my best. You know, I'm at Land Magazine, which is an ongoing struggle. And we put out 3 issues and hopefully we'll put out at least 3 more at some point. But
yeah,
it's just like you have, like people have to fight and people can't give up hope. Like I don't necessarily have hope. You know what I mean? Like I don't think like the world is like all great or it will be. Like, I mean, I kind of think like, you know, it's like definitely basically probably Versace loafer like on your throat for eternity at this point. But jeez, like,
yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean that people can't like build things or create things. Like that's the only thing we can do, I think, is left. Mm. That's the only thing. That's the only point of life is to still like, is to resist kind of this like hegemony and this like corporate destruction. And it seems really simplistic to make it be like, oh, the big corporations. Mm. And I used to like, you know, and they're like, cause it is overly simplistic to say like that. There are good people working at big corporations because they have no other choice. And like, I don't grudge them that for a split second.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I think Atlanta actually did a really good job where he like walks into like basically what seems like Apple or Spotify. And like, you know, it's just like, I'm like, oh, those people, like a lot of people like well-meaning and there's probably good people. I mean, there definitely are good people that work at Apple and Spotify. I know them. Like there's a lot of really talented former journalists. They're at both those companies. And I would never cast aspersions on them for a split second. I you know, I think it's a difficult situation to work at those companies. And I think they do a lot of good work, what they can. Mm. The problem is the corporate system is just like, unfortunately doesn't, you know, we talk about the independent labels. All the good rap is fucking from independents usually, or comes from independents at the start, like always. And, you know, like I always say this, but I was like, you know, most people would have picked YC, not Future. They would, you know, with Rax, they would have been like, oh, give YC the deal. Someone gave YC the deal instead of Future, you know, like, I mean, Future's Dungeon Family. I mean, like, Quick got famous doing the red tape on the streets of like LA. Like it was a bootleg, you know, cassette red tape was what he made. Like Sugar Free was grinding for 6 years trying to get his album put out.
Mm.
You know, Snoop was making underground cassettes. Like everyone starts underground and really wants to pretend that they didn't. And like, there's something, I think there's like, you know, I think of Alchemist as a perfect example, you know, where it's like, that dude is underground, he's popular. He's not underground, like class-wise in terms of an artist. He's underground almost as an aesthetic, like as a subterranean, as a subversive, as like a rebellious mentality. And that to me is what it represents. And like, I think that's all, you know, like I think that's a little corny, you know, not Alchemist. Alchemist is the least corny man alive. But I'm saying like, it can be really corny when people like use the underground as like, I don't like the mainstream and I only like the underground. It's like the same like bullshit that we went through in the late 90s and early 2000s. And like, it was insufferable then, it's insufferable now. But there's some truth to it. There's like, there's some, usually some truth to almost everything. Mm. Except for like when Donald Trump was a good president, you're like, there's actually no there's actually no truth to that. There is no truth to anything connected to that, because it's like, right, because everyone wants to be like, either things are black and white or the shades of gray, and you're like, I don't know, some things are both, like some things are shades of gray, some things are black and white.
That's life, like, man, that's life. Yeah, you can't sit here like judging it like that. I mean, Jeff, first of all, your passion and like fire in your belly for all the stuff you're saying about not having much hope, it translates to me now, and I'm just like, where did this guy even find this passion for text from? Because honestly, in the world I've worked in journalistic fields, to radio, to whatever, to digital content, whatever it is, and I've always found now more and more people are less reliant on text. I don't think it's right, but I feel like people in the power are like, text isn't the way, people don't read as much, blah blah blah. Where did it come from for you, bro, when you were sitting there and you were like, no, actually, the only way to convey what I feel about this subject is through 1,000 words. I can sit here for an hour and a half and not tell you how I feel.
I don't understand. I mean, I don't think it's that rare. I mean, I think like from the dawn of the Gutenberg era.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, it was kind of standard issue kind of thought. I don't know. It's rare now, I suppose. But
for you, though.
For me, I mean, I was like, I was like, probably my life was like threefold until I was like 21 or so. Like, I mean, I was like into sports. I was into like rap.
Yeah.
And music, mostly rap. And I was into books, you know, not maybe as much in high school because I was like kind of nerdy to be in books in high school. So you had to pretend like you didn't read, you know what I mean?
Reading. For sure.
I was like, no, I'm reading The Source, which I was, but you know what I mean? I wasn't out there reading like The Great Gatsby in high school. I mean, people were, but like I was, you know, I was always obsessed with books. It was always like my favorite thing. You know, my family would take me to the library. And that was just, I mean, that was everything. I got more books and my school library, city library was more difficult to kind of bend the rules. But yeah, and I fell in love with it. And, you know, writing, I never really thought I'd be a writer, to be honest with you. I always thought I'd like play sports or something. You know, I was like a pretty good baseball player.
Oh, okay.
Wasn't on the path to being a professional basketball player. But, you know, I thought like maybe I could play like, I thought maybe I could play like overseas in baseball, even though it's not really a thing. But maybe I could waste a few years. Maybe take steroids, make the low minor or something. I didn't take steroids, so I never made it to the low minor. Probably should have, honestly, in hindsight. I honestly would have been a great book. And, you know, like, all right, I'd have died at 55, but like, at least I would have gotten a book out of it.
Yeah.
So like, I would have been a great minor league baseball book. Kind of regret it. But, you know, kids take steroids. Yeah, I just put that as a quote. Like, you can't say anything anymore because they'll be like, oh, Jeff Tyson. You know, it's like, I wish I was, I'm not important enough, but it's like, well, maybe one day they'll be like, oh, yeah, you know, dumb writer endorses steroids on hip hop podcasts. I started reading a lot in college, like just because I don't know, like I just got really into like literature. I wasn't exposed to it. My family, like, there wasn't a reading family. I mean, my dad is a lawyer, so he's like educated, but like he's not a literary in any stretch. My mom, you know, went to a local 4-year school, went to a community college and went to a local 4-year school. She wasn't like a book person. No one in the family was really a book person, you know, but like, I mean, they encouraged it, but it wasn't like they were like, oh, read this book. I kind of had to come at it myself, and writing was just sort of, writing just was weird. I mean, it's a long story, but basically the short end of it is just some shit happened to me when I was in college. And I just like got really like a death happened to a kid I knew on my baseball team. And I got really inspired to write from it to kind of like, I was already kind of dabbling with it, but it kind of like led me to do it. And I started writing a book about this whole like tragedy that happened. And, you know, I was really dedicated to it. And, you know, I spent years after college, you know, working on it and rewriting new drafts. Must have done like 14 drafts. And then I just needed to survive. And I was like, you know, I've always loved rap, like since I was really young. Like, I mean, I'd had like cassettes since I was like 10 years old. And, you know, I didn't really like the way that the internet was, like, I didn't like internet criticism very much at the time. I mean, the shit I was writing was pretty bad too, honestly. Like, it wasn't like I was like changing the game. Like, it was like pretty shitty too.
Yeah.
But like, I just didn't like the kind of, again, like, you know, people are super binary about things. And I kind of think that like life is usually lived within the margins, and usually there's more complications inherent. And like, it's more interesting to explain that, like kind of what we're talking about Sugar Free at the beginning, you know? Started blogging, and I was like, fuck, well, all right, like, I'm gonna do this until I get a book deal. It became, you know, it like, and then, you know, blogs kind of like came, you know, I got a freelance career, thankfully. And you know, I haven't looked back. I haven't had a day job in like forever. I mean, it's been like a long time since I've had a day job.
That's a beautiful thing in a way, though.
Yeah, I'm really lucky. And it just you know, from there, it just, I wish I could shut down the blog, but unfortunately,
don't do that now, man. I've got you on here.
It became like the last blog. No one cared about it. I mean, the irony is like, it's like one of those things I'm always kind of, like, you know, it's, we go back to Nipsey, you know, it's like, you know, I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, I was the number one Nipsey fan from day one. Like, I fucked with Nipsey always. I mean, you had to fuck with Nipsey from LA, but I wasn't out here like, you know, I wasn't like waving the flag from day one or anything. I don't want to like get it twisted. I hate those people that are like, oh, it was Nipsey's biggest fan. I was like, of course I like Nipsey. Like, everyone liked Nipsey. But to me, Victory Lap was like clearly where I'm like, oh shit, like he's actually, he hit it. He's at that level now. Even though he had stuff before that was at that level. That was the first project where I was like, oh shit, the whole album, this is like really great. I mean, it's probably a classic album, or it'll go down as one. And then it just, no one cared about the blog really. And then it kind of just, everyone died and no one wanted to keep going. And, you know, I don't blame anyone for quitting. I mean, that definitely is a sensible thing. And now, you know, we have a Patreon, and I mean, it's not enough for me to live off of, that's for sure. And you have to pay editors and the writers, and it's just, you know, it's definitely difficult. It's, I mean, I'm like lucky now to kind of be like hopefully getting to a point in my career where I'm not gonna have to, you know, I can do kind of more like longer form things, hopefully.
Yeah.
hopefully, you know, I'd love to write books and documentaries and do stuff like that. That'd I mean, I'd love to do, you know, I'd always love to do scripted things, but it's just, you know, it's difficult. People don't, it's fine. Like, it just takes longer when you want to do it on your own terms,
yeah.
You know? And I think that's the one thing that you have to, everyone has to keep in mind. You're not, you have to divorce yourself from the results. You have to just focus on the process and like the meaning that it has to you and just doing good work. And like, you can't, I mean, you'll drive yourself crazy if you worry about how many people like it or how many retweets you have or how many Instagram likes. It's just a way to, you know, how many streams you get. Yeah. How many views you get on YouTube? It's just a recipe for insanity.
Forget it. I think just so you know, from the other perspective, because I feel like creatives, especially writers as well, you can get into your universe and maybe you don't hear from other people enough. And I just want to let you know, man, because I think that your way of storytelling, you tell your interests and coverage is always through interesting stories and the way you've, all the writers you've commissioned on the blog as well. And I feel like never lose that, bro, because I feel like for us, for people out here, that's a window and it helps us create. And I feel that's true. I feel that is true. Like, it's true for podcasts, it's true for YouTube, it's true for text, whatever. But just so you know, in case someone hasn't told you, Jeff, just keep that passion there, bro, because I feel like it helps me, I know for a fact. And I know it helps people that do the same thing I do. So,
no, I appreciate that. You know, it's like, there's a lot of people that I think are like, really are like care. And I'm always kind of like, I'm like always deeply flattered and kind of slightly embarrassed. But like it does keep you going, I think, to a certain degree. You know, it's like, it's really, you can't let yourself get caught up in it, but at the same time, like it is really meaningful. And like, I, you know, I appreciate anyone. Like, I remember being, I remember when I was really young, you know, starting out the blog, I was like 23 years old. And I just remember being like, man, I got 100 views in a day. Wow. Like, you know what I mean? That's amazing. Like, I think you always have to have that attitude where you're like, if you have, like, I just remember being like, you should be grateful to have one fan, because I had none. I remember having none. I had not a single person fuck with me. Not a single fucking person other than maybe like my friends and my family, you know? And you have to keep that mentality to be like, I think like, you know, it's always something that's, you know, it's like, I think that's one of the reasons why Kendrick is a good artist, you know?
Yeah.
He like really, I interviewed him once and like, you know, I got to run a second. We've been talking for too long, but like,
sorry, but
it's my fault. It's totally my fault. I just wind me up and I talk. But like, you know, I interviewed him once like in 2014 or 15, right before he was about to win the Grammy get nominated, performed at the Grammys with Imagine Dragons. He did Good Kid, Mad, he did Mad City. I started asking secondary interview questions to the people in the room. Like, Punch was there, I think, and like Dave Free might have been there. And, you know, Kendrick walked out of the room because he goes, I don't want to hear this. I'm going to go in the next room. And that to me, I mean, that's a guy with a really high artistic IQ, I think, because he just like, it's not good for an artist to hear that shit. It's like, why do your favorites fall off? It's because they believe their own hype.
Yeah.
And you have to just get a really small circle of people that you trust and like, you know, who will be tell you the truth. You know, other than that, like, you know, it's great. I mean, I appreciate every bit of kind words I get. Like I said, like I don't take it for granted. But I just think that's the secret to kind of sanity. Like, I don't have to hear, I have no secret to sanity. I'm losing my fucking mind most days, so don't get me wrong. Like, don't let me out here like I'm some Buddha. Like, I am just crazy as shit like everyone else. So,
yeah, man. You know. But no, that's a really, really insightful way to end it, man. I've appreciated all your time and passion and insight, bro. Cool. It's just been special.
Thank you so much. Well, we got to do.
Yes, yeah, me too. Me too, man. I'm just going to leave it then with just a question I ask everyone before they leave.
Sure.
What's the last great piece of music you heard? Could be old, could be new. Just the last thing you heard where you were like,
I'm really into this kid, Remble from LA. Like, he's Draco. Added him to the Sting team, and he's the first LA rapper. I mean, I shouldn't say the. I mean, but he's like he's the first LA rapper in a minute that I'm like, damn, like this kid could be like one of the greats. Like, I think he's so talented. Like, he only has like four songs out, three or four songs out, but he had the song called Ruthless Freestyle, and I guess Draco heard it and was like, yo, put me on that. And I guess he met Draco in jail, which is like crazy. You know, they met in county. You're going back to Sugar Free. You know what I mean? Like, this is where the art comes from a lot of the time. You know, it's like they met in county. And you know, Draco, I guess, followed him on Instagram or something, and Draco's got an amazing ear, and he's a brilliant, you know, maybe it doesn't always, like, you know, when you hear an interview with him, he doesn't always sound like as brilliant as he is, but he definitely is brilliant, and he hears and sees things that like maybe he doesn't articulate it unless it's in his music. And then like, there's a lot of artists like that, when you interview him, you're like, you know, he doesn't sound like he's this deep, but there's a lot there. But yeah, no, he heard him and it's like a Ruthless Freestyle, and Remble just like starts it off, and I was like, damn, like, who the fuck is Remble? Because I didn't even want to lie. I was like, Draco's like doing a song with Remble. I'm like, this guy must have paid him. or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I heard the song, I was like, oh shit, like he's going in. And he did this song called the Gordon Ramsay freestyle.
The Gordon Ramsay.
And he had this line about like Ryan Hollins like fighting with Mike Bibby. And I was like this old, like, you know, like basketball fight from like the mid 2000s. I was like, that's a crazy reference. I was like, what the fuck? I was like, and then he dropped a song called TED Talk. The video, you watch the videos because the videos are like, and he's on the Power Ride and the Kisser song that Draco just dropped.
Okay.
Yeah, Rebel's the fucking truth. Like, he's right. From LA, 20 years old, so I think Rebel has next for sure.
Anyone who's doing a Gordon Ramsay freestyle, I'm down, bro. I'm like, I'm in.
It's great. Yeah, it's amazing, the Gordon Ramsay freestyle. Like, Rebel already had, like, that might be like top five song of the year when all is said and done.
Big.
So hard.
Big. I'm enjoying that, man. Well, yep. Jeff, man, keep doing your thing.
Awesome.
All the listeners, go check out the blog, go check out Jeff's great work. We'll put it in the description and stuff. And man, until the next time, bro, I appreciate you coming on. So, thank you, bro. I appreciate you, man.
Yeah,
wicked. Peace, bro. Peace.